Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 28th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Criticizing a Worldview Through Primetime Television, Session 4, Reading TV for Social and Theological Meaning, presented by Chris Voss Rothmeyer, number VOK-2003-09. Let's listen in.
Media Literacy, Media Education. The title of this series is called Theology, Culture, and Primetime Television. Over the last four days, I've been talking about how primetime television has influenced our culture and the way we live and think. So I think the more education we have about the shows that we increasingly watch, the better off we are and the better able we are to think consciously throughout our daily lives. Because our behavior and our attitudes are being affected by what we watch. I might just start by alluding to this book, Bowling Alone, which is in the bookstore. It's a really good book. I actually just discovered it when I was at Holden here, but found some really relevant things to the session that we're talking about. We're about to watch an episode of The Simpsons, and I think it's important to recognize, in this book it says, the single most important consequence of the television revolution has been to bring us home. And that's a very key theme in The Simpsons. You may know the name Homer Simpson. He is like the chief Homer. He brings us home. His name is no accident. The Simpsons is all about The Simpsons is all about family life and the importance of family life. Even the opening sequence, you'll see that happening, and we'll talk about that when that happens. Early enthusiasts supported this new medium, television that is, and spoke eagerly of television as an electronic hearth, and we'll see the Simpsons gathered around the electronic hearth in that first opening sequence. That would foster family togetherness. Although the reality is somewhat mixed. Nielsen Media Research has been doing surveys over time between 1985 and 1997, the number of channels received by the average household soared from 19 in 1985 to 49 in 1997 and continues to rise. The ability of television to create single national water cooler culture has shrunk, and fewer of us watch common TV programs. That it shows interestingly, in the 1950s, two-thirds of all Americans tuned in to watch the top-rated TV show. You know what it was?
The Fugitive?
Bonanza?
Bonanza's a good guess.
What was it?
It wasn't Bonanza, but it's a good guess.
Was it Disney's Wide World of Color?
No. It was a popular sitcom, the first kind of major...
All in the Family?
That was in the 70s.
The Honeymooners?
In the 1950s. That's another good guess.
I Love Lucy.
Very good.
Oh,
I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of all Americans tuned in and watched this show. In the early 70s, the top-rated program was indeed All in the Family, which actually almost got cut in its first season because it was got too low ratings. Mm-hmm. But it turned out to be the top-rated program and drew about half of the national TV audience. In the mid-90s, the audience share for ER and Seinfeld was barely one-third. So... we're seeing that fewer and fewer of us are watching common shows. One of the things about television was that it had hoped to bring people together. Some of you remember community television programming, where you might have seen some of your friends on TV at one point in these required shows that people in the community could be involved in. I watched Uncle Gus when I was in New Hampshire at that time. There might have been other local programming shows, but fewer and fewer of those shows are being shown, and more television is being offered, more programs are being offered, people have a wider range of things to offer, and can share perspectives on fewer and fewer things, because there's so many options. So, we'll see in the opening sequence a very, very common theme in The Simpsons, and I'm just going to show it, stop it at the end of the sequence, but we'll talk about it afterwards. We see it. sorry about the brief repetition here.
Because of what Bart's writing on the board. Mm-hmm. I am not a lean, mean spinning machine.
That changes every week, mm-hmm. also. Mm-hmm. Do you watch this show at all? So do you know that it changes every week what he writes on the board?
Yes.
Yeah. And how they get to the couch. Right?
Yes, and how they get to the couch. That scene changes mm-hmm. every week also. Mm-hmm. It is always different. What else do you notice?
It's always subversive.
Okay. We're talking about the opening sequence here. What you notice about the opening sequence? Where are the Simpsons headed? Where do we find them?
I missed them.
Where do we find them at first, and where are they headed?
They're on their daily activities, and they're heading home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a key thing to understand when you're watching the Simpsons. Again, Homer is the chief. Homer, he comes home, and all the Simpsons come home. I'm going to show the sequence one more time, and note certain things. What Bart's writing on the board, he's always writing something different. This one he's writing, I am not a lean, mean, spitting machine. He writes different things every time. Lisa comes home. You can just barely see her. I had to slow this sequence down. She appears in about three frames from here to here on her bicycle. And you probably won't notice what is actually on her bicycle, But again, in those three frames, I had to pause it and stop it. She has a saxophone on the back of her bike, and then she has a stack of books this high on the front of her bike. You'll notice Marge comes in the car. That's who's coming in the car. And then
Maggie.
Maggie, thank you. Then Maggie is in the car seat in the back, and she nearly runs Homer over. Is it intentional? We don't know. Let's watch it one more time, and we'll say a couple more things. They're watching a show. Now, what's the show about?
A family.
Okay. They've come and sat down. They're all sitting down. Actually, let's start from the beginning. What's the opening scene?
Bart.
The sky.
The sky. Okay. And what's coming out of the sky?
Their names.
Okay. What words do you hear?
Simpsons.
Who's singing it?
Choir.
Some choir, we don't know. Maybe some angelic choir for all we know. So here we have this view from the clouds, this angelic choir singing the Simpsons, and then through the P we see the scene that comes next. But we have this view of like God from on high looking down upon the city of, do you know what the city's name is?
Springfield.
Why do you think it's called Springfield?
Because every state has one.
Just about every state in the country has one. And so we don't know if it's Springfield, Illinois, Springfield, Massachusetts, Springfield, or we just don't know. But the idea is that, it's very intentional, the idea is that it's supposed to be everywhere in the country. This is a story about what the Simpsons are sitting down to watch. They're sitting down to watch, again, what?
TV.
Hearth.
Right, the electronic hearth. They're sitting down, they're all gathered there on the hearth, they're about to watch this television show, the director, the producers, the creators and all this kind of stuff, about a show about them. It's a show about themselves. The implication being, here we are sitting down to watch a show about ourselves. This is a show about we ourselves in this culture. Okay. Actually, I think two things can be gleaned. One from this opening sequence. One, that the idea is that we are, that the family is the center, and you'll find that over and over. The recurring theme in the show is that the family is the center. And the second thing, of course, is that just as the characters are animated by forces beyond themselves, including not just the illustrators, but including materialism and consumerism, both of those themes are key in The Simpsons as a whole, and we'll see it again in this episode. We are subject to forces of those same, consumerism and materialism beyond our, or maybe within our control. But this show is challenging us to think, are we actually controlled by those forces? So watching the show gives us a chance to open our eyes and see if those realities are really true. Today is the fourth in the series of classes that I'm talking about. The first day we talked about myth using Star Trek, world building, trying to build a world understanding. The second day was epilogue. I talked about defense of a world understanding using nightly news. Wednesday we talked about action, and ER was our template to talk about things that just describe the world and what the world was. There were no fewer than 14 issues within culture that show touched upon, 9 different subplots. Today we're talking about the genre. This is a situation comedy, interestingly, but the category that we're talking about is satire. This show is an example of shameless satire. There is nothing that this show does not make fun of. There just isn't anything. Like I was saying a couple days ago, MASH started out that way. It was satirical when it started, but it got popular. And then it got to, you need to please the producers and the different people who produced the show and advertised on the show. So it became much more on the other side, much more on the action side, like ER, presenting certain issues rather than criticizing or making satire. Interestingly, the previous two shows before this one that made it on cartoons, that made it on network television, do you know what those would have been?
Sure, Flintstones.
Flintstones and the Jetsons in the early 60s. No other cartoon made it into primetime television, and this one stuck it out for 14 years. We're about ready to go into our 14th season, I believe. It started in 1987 on the Tracy Ullman Show, kind of a variety show, and this one was used as fillers between different plots and sequences. But then it came to its own in 1989, and it's been going strong ever since, and stronger ever since. Really, it's a very popular show, specifically among Gen Xers, but then increasingly also among Gen Y.
Yeah.
So, let's watch the episode. But before I do that, I want to, like we've done in the past, kind of section you off into different questions. I want to have you look for certain things as you watch the show. So we've talked about the introduction. Let's have you three right here, and then Mr. and Mrs. Dorn coming in. You can look at who are the antagonists and the protagonists in the show, and what are the stereotypes. So antagonists, protagonists, and then stereotypes of this particular episode of The Simpsons. And then how about you four right here, including Lori? How about you look at the dominant message of the episode? And if there are any non-resolvable contradictions in the show, we'll help you out. And then how about you three right here, in this line right here, you look at, what elements of satire are included in this episode, since that's the particular aspect of shows that we're looking at today. And then how about
this? Yes, am I included in that three?
Yes, indeed. Here, and your name is?
Rachel.
Rachel, okay, very good. We've been talking about things called signs and messages.
Satire or something like that.
Do you know what satire is? Okay. Right, let me get back to the satire question. Satire. What's who can give us a definition of satire?
Were you imitating something?
Poking fun.
Poking fun.
Yeah.
Exaggeration.
Imitation.
This show pokes fun at everything. So how does the show poke fun at things and show us a different way to think? So signs and messages. How about all five of you over here? What specific things do you see and hear on the show, and what do they communicate? What does the music communicate? What do you see? Are there different races that are portrayed on the show? What does Bart's bedroom communicate? What does the church communicate? What do stained glass windows communicate? What do different sounds on the show, like bleeps and ticks and that kind of thing? Different sounds, what do they communicate? And then we'll talk about some different other things. We'll get into a theological analysis also, like what's the human predicament, how's that presented, and then what is salvation, according to The Simpsons?
All in one episode.
Really?
All in one episode. Okay, so can you see it? Were you able to see it okay with the lights on? Okay, let's do it.
No shoes, no shirt, no salvation.
No, right from that, right into your mouth.
Oh, please rise for our opening hymn. In the Garden of Eden by I. Ron Butterfly. Hey, Bart, remember when we used to make love to the zoo?
$5 on these.
Where'd you get $5? I want $5.
sold my soul to Milhouse.
What? How do you do that? Your soul is the most valuable part of you.
You believe in that junk?
Well, whether or not the soul is physically real, Bart, it's the symbol of everything fine inside us.
Poor gullible Lisa. I'll keep my crappy sponges, thanks.
Art, your soul is the only part of you that lasts forever. For $5, Milhouse could own you for a zillion years.
Well, if you think he got such a good deal, I'll sell you my conscience for $4.50.
Of course, for decency, too. It's a Bart sales event. Everything about me must go.
Hey, boy, how you doing? Man, what's gotten into you? Jeez, you're pretty puffy for someone who eats bugs all day.
No, they're watching Itchy and Scratchy shows. This is a popular show that they like to watch.
I know that's funny, but I'm just not laughing.
Pablo Neruda said laughter is the language of the soul.
I am familiar with the works of Pablo Neruda.
Well,
nope, I don't feel a thing.
That's creepy, Bart. I think you really did lose your soul.
Good boy. Help! Help! Who's doing that?
Nothing.
Help! Help me! Help! Why isn't anybody out? Help me!
There's something a little off about your hub.
Mom, I need to tell you something. I kind of...
Let me guess. A mother can always tell. It's not fair nuclear war. It's not swing test anxiety. It almost feels like you're missing something. Something important.
Like I don't have a soul?
Oh, honey, you're not a monster.
Simpson, eh? Well, since my breakfast burrito is congealing rapidly, I will be blunt. You're too late. I sold your soul last night. Yes, yes. I found a buyer right away. For that, I do.
Cool.
I'm not at liberty to divulge the party, but they were most interested in having possession of little boy's soul. Excuse me, no banging your head on the display case, please. It contains a very rare Mary Worth, in which she has advised a friend to commit suicide. Thank you.
Are you there, Bud? It's me, Bart Simpson. I know I never paid too much attention in church, but I could really use some of that good stuff now. I'm afraid. I'm afraid some weirdo's got my soul and I don't know what they're doing to it. I just want it back. Please? Oh, I hope you can hear this.
Oh.
your piggy bank, not any of the ones you know about. Thank you. Happy to do it. But you know, Bart, some philosophers believe that nobody is born with a soul, that you have to earn one through suffering and thought and prayer.
Have a little bit more spirituality in it than some episodes do, those of you who've seen it, who've seen Simpsons before. But all of the Simpsons episodes have something to talk about. This one has a lot to talk about. So let's start kind of like over here. Protagonist, antagonist, stereotype.
Of course, the organist.
Organist?
Organist in the typical look of a
Stereotype.
Well, the whole congregation, too, of being, you know, just doing rote liturgy and not paying attention to what they're saying, so he could slip in into Gotta Eat It and into the hymn and nobody noticed.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a stereotype. Congregations just sing mindlessly. They can sing in a Gotta Eat It, they can sing anything, and it's just all the same to them. Whatever.
It's hard on the organist.
Oh yeah, it was hard on.
Are you annoyed?
I edited out the part. This beginning intro was long, but they started holding up candles and all like this. And
And then Bart's sister. What? I don't watch it as much. Bart's sister has stand there, you know, keeping, you know, the soul as part of you. And,
would you call her a protagonist or an antagonist?
I don't know she was the one to stand there. You know, you're not the same anymore. And he couldn't laugh at a things that were funny or have any emotion when his body got hit or something or whatever he did and got caught in the staircase. Having no emotions, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She does help move the plot forward, for sure. Whether she's the person who is the main character in the plot, I don't know. Bart seems to be kind of the main character in this one. And that's actually been changing over the years. At the very beginning, Bart was certainly the main character. Still, I think the children are the main characters, generally speaking, in The Simpsons. Homer's been getting a lot of airtime lately. But the children, getting back to that materialism concept, the parents, Maggie, Marge, adults in the show, are generally already overcome by this materialism that we see in this culture so much. The kids are not quite there, and so they are free to criticize it, and they often do. So, maybe so, Maggie, go ahead.
You're saying Maggie? I'm sorry.
Mark was saying Maggie was a, let's call her a protagonist, because she moves the show.
Lisa moves the show forward.
Lisa moved the story forward.
Yeah.
What was the name? I don't know the name of the kid who bought the soul.
That's Milhouse.
Would you call him a protagonist or antagonist?
No, he's an antagonist.
He'd be the
antagonist.
He was. As was the preacher.
As was Reverend Lovejoy. Reverend Lovejoy. What kind of church is this? Did you ever think about what is it not? Is it a Catholic church?
Mm-mm. No.
Is it a Baptist church?
It's not any specific denomination.
Right, it's true.
It has a lot of stained glass, so it's more of a traditional.
Yeah. It's more traditional. It's probably, by many people's estimation, probably Protestant. It's not Catholic necessarily. But it's probably Protestant. It's kind of middle class, and the Simpsons are kind of between that middle class and the working class. They're somewhere in the midst of that. Socioeconomic status plays throughout this show, and it's a heavy anchor for Bart and Lisa, who are arguably trying to get out of this economic status. Do any of you know what Homer does for a living?
He works at a nuclear power plant.
Yes.
Yeah, he works in a nuclear stuff, but he's not very good at it. And he keeps on causing horrible problems.
Yes.
He's you know, a safety inspector.
He's a safety inspector at the nuclear power plant. Homer Simpson is a safety inspector at a nuclear power plant.
No, no.
Makes you feel good, doesn't it? And Marge, what does she do?
I didn't know that they show it that often.
Sometimes she's a little weaker, sometimes she works.
She's mostly staying home.
Stay at home.
She's
mom.
A stay-at-home.
She's mostly
activist sometimes.
Yeah.
She can be.
Yeah.
She can be. She has this huge, tall, bouffant hairdo, which is symbolic in some way, because she's kind of the glue that ties the family together. And so she carries this heavy burden on her to keep the family together. Homer is kind of like this, he is just after every get-rich scheme out there. He has no moral conscience except when it comes to getting what he wants. He loves beer, he loves TV, he loves donuts with pink frosting on it, and that's just his life.
And Bart, he has no hair.
And he has no hair. Well, he's got
something like that. What's that one that Sally Struthers and... All in the Family?
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah, in a certain way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in that stream of the Honeymooners kind of on that level, and then All in the Family, and then Simpsons, kind of all kind of talking about that family structure.
Mm-hmm. It's always a moral at the end. Homer learns the moral.
But,
yeah.
But Homer's lack of conscience is always a short-term effect. Eventually, it always catches up with him.
Yeah.
He does a lot of repenting.
He does do a lot of repenting.
Yeah. Yes.
Bart does some. He did in this
episode.
Yes, but does it less than Homer does.
Mm-hmm. It was a fair amount more pain.
Yeah, really. Okay, so
Homer's kind of like the third kid, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He's a big kid.
I'm a big kid.
Elise is a first wages one.
Yeah, she is. She is the family genius. She's got this stack of books. Again, you didn't see it when you were in the introduction, but if you slowed it down and you watched those three frames that Lisa appeared in as she was coming home on her bicycle, saxophone on the back, stack of books on the front. She is definitely the family genius. She's the one with the moral conscience as well. The other episode that I considered showing is one called... it has a name, but it's the one where there's this angel that Lisa finds, and she is the moral conscience in that show as well.
In the longer introduction that's on, she's playing a saxophone in the school class in the introduction, and she's always kicked out of the class because she's too good.
Those are the newer episodes.
This one
was on a few years ago.
She's misunderstood, I think, because she wants to play outside the box, because it conforms to the normal band she wants to play.
She plays by a different saxophone, you might say.
There's an episode that addresses just that.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very good.
Yeah, it is good.
Mm-hmm. The women all seem to be the saviors.
Okay, that's a fascinating dynamic also. What is the role of the males in the show? Could you, it's hard to
mess up.
The goof-ups,
They do mess up. They're screwed up. And the women and the girls?
Well, I just love Marge's stereotype of being the mother who's going to be such a perfect mother that she can tell what's bothering her kid by the nature of the hug.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Almost
and she's real close.
Yeah, she's...
You're missing something.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Intuitive.
Yeah, she's intuitive. There are times when Marge will just kind of have this down-to-earthness about her and common-sense attitude. And there are times when you think, get with it, Marge.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa's kind of that person as well. She's, again, the moral conscience of the show. And she's the genius. She keeps everybody in line. So the women and the girls kind of keep the show on a moral track. And the men and the boys, they're just kind of out there experimenting, trying things, and they go that direction.
Marge kind of has the childlike faith at times. She just believes, just trusts.
Yes. She has a simple faith. And Homer does too. They pray regularly in the show. They go to church regularly. They pray regularly. They have a very strong faith. Deep, I'm not sure about, but a strong one. Okay. How about, what else were we going to talk about? How about the dominant message of this episode? How would you categorize, who was on that?
Was that us?
What would you say?
Well, your actions are significant, and they have reactions and consequences.
Sometimes in the church you can lose your soul.
Yeah. That's a good one. I didn't even think of that one.
That's right. It happened in the church.
Yeah.
And it's good to have a little sister.
Losing your soul is a bad thing.
Is not a bad thing? Or
it is a bad thing.
Whatever that soul is.
Souls make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, community is important.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm including family and community. I'm
okay.
Saying what's around you is important.
Right.
Key theme in the Simpsons throughout. Family and community is important.
That's right, because what haunted him in his nightmare was what had happened to his relationships with everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't exist anymore. Yeah.
Yep. One of the stereotypes that we didn't touch upon, which relates to another dominant message in the show, is that we have a soul. That's a stereotype. And that soul is somehow separate from us. You saw in that dream that there was this shadowy thing, or ghost-like thing, and then there was the corporal thing.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow, the soul is separate. A very Greek notion that there these two things are happening, but they're separate. And that whatever happens to us when we die, something else goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the flip side of that was that we're not quite whole if we don't have one.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't row your boat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you can't move forward or get places.
Yeah.
But the soul was separate from you in that dream physically, but the who they were as a soul or the corporate physical being, they had the same attributes.
They did the same.
Right. Yeah. So do you remember that part where Lisa says, whether we have a soul or not, it's the symbol of all that's good inside us? I'd put that into the category of major theme within this show. Whatever you conceive of as a soul, it's the symbol. There's something beyond what we can see and touch and feel with our bodies that is good within us. A lot of people have attributed that to this soul. Race is a powerful theme in this show. And to those of you who are looking for signs, let's talk about that just for a moment. What kind of signs did you see? What kind of things did you see visually and audibly?
The money.
Oh, no, it's not
for. The money in the church was kind of a sign of church greed.
Uh-huh.
It was a stereotype.
Greed.
Certainly.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, cha-ching.
Right after he asked, why would they make this up? Cha-ching.
Right. Which goes back to a stereotype in a lot of people's minds, too.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the church there? Cha-ching.
To make money, yeah.
Mm-hmm. His redemption, that little piece of paper comes, in the middle of his praying. Mm-hmm.
Cluttering
the open window, on the wings of God, on the wind. I just thought it was...
Is this a sign?
Okay, it was a sign from God.
Boing.
Yeah, he consumed it.
And he ate it. Like communion.
He swallowed it.
It was communion.
It was communion.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's the best way to get it back in me.
Yeah, really.
Chewed on and swallowed.
Mm-hmm. Remember that part where Milhouse says, when you sneeze, someone says, God bless you, and then crams it back in.
Yes.
That's a real theme. That's the reason why people say, God bless you. You've got, how about that city during the dream and then at the end of the show? What is that thing?
The outline is the Emerald City.
The Emerald City.
Okay. The beautiful city. Zion, the city of God. I mean, the implication is that it's heaven.
Mm-hmm. Or somehow.
And you have to cross the boats. And you have to do something to get a little...
Sink the other guy's boat on the way.
The river is deep and the river is wide, but you get across there. And who gets across?
Those with the souls.
Yeah. Yeah, so Bart's kind of swimming around there. You know, the interesting thing I also find about the show is right at the end when Bart gets his soul back and he's as mischievous as he's ever been,
mm-hmm.
tips over another person's boat, and then where does he go?
Straight to heaven.
He does, still.
Grace.
Still does. Grace. It's grace.
It's grace. Mm-hmm.
But sinner saints. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He also didn't have, you know, when that other guy beat him up, he didn't, you know, he just was laying there. You know, he couldn't fight back. So that part of it was, you know, his own initiative to be rough and tumble kid that, you know, does get into spats with kids that are not so nice. You know, so there's that going on too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of soul. You know?
So,
right, and also that, you know, he didn't laugh at the cruel thing they did to their dad.
Yeah.
But that's part of soul.
Yeah. I know.
That's a lot.
And no one helped.
Yeah, for
Yeah,
no one came to the assistance of the father.
Right. Yeah, Lisa was right there beside him, laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so maybe some of the things that we laugh at and think are funny are kind of twisted. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's just the humor of the show. But it is language, as you all know from reading extensive volumes of Pablo Neruda, language of the soul.
I didn't understand what was happening when the space meeting.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's this recurring show, and what's the name of the show?
Itchy and
Scratchy. Itchy and Scratchy.
Yeah. Lisa and Bart always watch this.
It's a cartoon within the cartoon.
Yeah,
right.
Cartoon within the cartoon.
And it's
kind of
cool.
It's where there's this mouse and there's this cat, and their names are Itchy and Scratchy, and the mouse is always trying to find some way to get rid of the cat.
And originally it was Tom and Jerry.
Right.
Because
it's Tom and Jerry.
And nobody noticed it.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right.
So it's a parody of Tom and Jerry.
It is.
And it is graphic. It's
very
disgusting.
Very graphic.
And
yeah.
It
can
laugh like it's
the
most delightful thing.
So
in the
it carries
world.
Tom and Jerry beyond it to its logical
Marsh
conclusion.
Tries to get rid of the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting. Or like the Roadrunner and Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
That same kind of thing. So in a certain sense, it's lampooning shows like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What elements are satire? So that's actually one.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right there.
Absolutely.
What other elements of satire? We
an
mentioned
interesting,
actually...
An interesting one, I thought, was the organ in the church. You know, you got the two symbols of a traditional church, the stained glass windows and the organ. The organ goes up and up and up and disappears into the fog.
Yeah.
It's so
I thought the music was a satire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were trying to be very, very hip. And no one could really sing it. It was kind of like out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And the organist was just going like crazy, trying
yeah.
to do all this stuff, and then she finally passed out on the organ.
So right, such a riot.
But there's satire in that too, you know, just poking fun at old lady church organists.
Right.
Stereotypic.
Yeah.
And yet, bless their hearts that they're up for it.
She
was
playing it.
Yeah.
She's giving it her all.
This is what I got.
And very worth advising somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is it satire when the snitch Milhouse gets in trouble just as equally as the other? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably not, but.
Well,
the
whole
the Reverend Lovejoy says it's.
Oh, that was great.
That whole scene.
That was great. And they're doing it by rote.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's
do
just,
it.
Just Bart's eyes, just kind of
mm-hmm.
going
yeah,
along.
Yeah.
He's memorized this whole
he's
thing.
He's rolling.
and experience not, but burning hot coals, and drink not, but burning hot cola. I will go to hell and be next to prostitutes and single mothers. And got that crows. They've heard all of this stuff. So it's
all in one.
Right, right. So for those who haven't attended church much, or at least a meaningful understanding of church, that's what all the church is just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this church is making fun of that. I don't know. Certainly it's making fun of Reverend Lovejoy, this the man who's preaching, Every word that comes out of his mouth sounds like a sermon. He is just pontificating at every moment, whether he says good morning or whether he says...
The restroom's to the right.
Yeah, right. Down the hall and to the right. Everything that comes out of his mouth is a sermon. He's just Mr. Preach every moment.
You know, it really does reflect the theology and spirituality of our time. I mean, the church doesn't come out ahead. The church ends up with a pretty negative image. I mean, that doesn't get redeemed in the show. However, the concept of having a soul, either whether you choose to believe it symbolically or literally, that's kind of an important thing. And that's where I think a lot of folks are in the culture today. Church, but, you know, spirituality, having a soul, attending to your soul.
Yeah, people do honor that.
And I noticed that, like, both the beginning and toward the end, the guy that bought Bart's soul said, soul's in here, and then when Bart got his soul back, he ate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't make
that connection. Yeah, mm-hmm. It is within you, and he ended up the man that bought, or the boy that got $5 from him, or gave $5. And he ended up, Bart realizing that the soul was inside, and he ended up eating his, actually eating his paper of his soul.
Well, he also destroyed the contract that was the thing that was binding him. So,
right.
I mean that.
One thing, I don't know where I can go with this, but the fact that it was so easy for Bart to sell it, but he went to the comic book dealer trying to buy it back, and it was almost impossible for him to get it back. And it was only he was able to get it back when it was given back, but through someone's grace, he wasn't able to physically purchase it, he was able to sell it so easily.
How did it end up at the comic?
Yeah, I cut that out because it was it was awkward to put it in there. But Milhouse sells it to this guy, and then Lisa buys it from him.
Milhouse sells it just to get some cash?
Exactly.
Just like Bart wanted some cash?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of that thing, too. I mean, Bart bought some sponge toy that was kind of useless. So.
Although he had
the letdown of material goods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
The Milhouse, actually, at one point, Bart wants to buy it back from Milhouse, and Milhouse is using it in his backyard with all of his army vehicles and trucks and that kind of thing, and running over this piece of paper that's got Bart's soul on it. and Bart comes into the backyard and says, Milhouse, I'll buy my soul back. Oh, so you want to buy your soul back again, Bart? $50. So he wants to sell it. He wants
there's consumerism.
It is. This show is constant. So let's think about institutions that this show is making fun of.
Church.
Certainly the church.
Because it showed that, was it Lovejoy that after, I don't know, part of the main part of the service, he's standing there, all those coins were going in his coin slots.
It is merciless against the church. The pawn shop is another one. I mean, you've got this scruffy, kind of fat, this midriff is showing here, and he's eating a breakfast burrito, and I will be blunt.
Yes, he doesn't speak like he looks.
Yeah, right. That's another stereotype, but it's another institution, that this kind of slimy, sleazy pawn shop guy.
Their school is always.
It is, not in this episode so much, but it is always. I mean, the family, politics, government, play, work, the home.
Shopkeepers of any
shopkeep. You just name it. This show tears it apart. Mm-hmm. But it does so in such a way that just makes us laugh in a certain way. And it's a very fascinating dynamic about this show. It continues to maintain that satirical edge over its 14-year history.
Amazing.
It continues to be popular. And people like to watch it. I mean, it says something about what U.S. citizens like about humor, what they find funny.
But even Milhouse, the stereotypic bookish nerd, you know, how can somebody with such thick glasses be so stupid?
Right.
Yeah. Thick glasses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thick glasses
be so stupid. That's a great line.
Well, okay, so is that lifting up people with thick glasses? Because they're presumably smart, but he's stupid.
And he is.
Generally, he's smart. Okay. All right, well, let's talk about theology a little bit in our last about 8 or 9 minutes of class. So, what do you think is the human predicament that's presented in this show?
Losing your soul.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem?
Selling your soul.
Well, okay, selling your soul.
Doing things that have really long-term and important consequences.
Uh-huh. Well, and that don't appear as important on the surface. Uh-huh. There's nothing, you know, he writes it on a scrap of paper. Bart's soul, uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
How is that one's soul? Uh-huh. But yeah.
So let me give you...
Things that we take for granted that we've never really understood, like what is a soul? Uh-huh. And so we don't know what it is. Uh-huh.
Well, there was an interesting change too. Is that the soul? First of all, Bart said, "No, there is none." Like, so there wasn't. But then, the soul was something that was good for this life and now. And then there was that transition that it has ramifications for the next life.
Yeah.
But it was a very, to me, it was a very abrupt transition. Suddenly, no, there's more to this than just, I can't feel, I can't laugh, I can't do things like that, which was a this life consideration. And then suddenly people were rowing across the river to heaven. So to me, it was an abrupt change.
But there was a change.
There was a change.
And that's a key theological concept.
Yeah.
Change. How do the characters change throughout the episode?
Yeah, yeah.
What in our Christian lives, how are we changed? Getting back to the soul concept, though, what makes Bart sell his soul? What is going on in his head?
He doesn't believe that there is a soul.
He doesn't believe there is a soul. Is that our problem, that we don't believe? Like, let me give you a couple Christological kind of like atonement theories. And there are many, many, many don't believe that there's just one. Some people pray the Lord's Prayer by saying, "Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." The concept there being that we are sinful and owe a debt to God, which Christ paid
mm-hmm.
by dying on the cross for us. That mm-hmm. is an atonement theology.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that we lack understanding, and that through Christ's example of living a life as he did, we gain an understanding of how to live the Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
Or another one is... Schleiermacher came up with this one. We lack God consciousness, and God brings us into consciousness through Christ's continuing, and the Spirit's continuing working in our lives. We are gaining God consciousness, and that God consciousness is the salvation. So what is the problem that we're presented with here? Why does Bart sell his soul? What are we addicted to? It's one of the themes. I mean, to look at you there, but
money.
Well, yeah, he wants
I think
money.
So.
Mm-hmm. Money.
I think that's a major thing. We
an
are
instant. An instant gratification.
So our problem is that we just are so fixated on the here and now, the selling our soul for $5. In fact, remember that scene in the middle of the show when Bart says, "I'll sell you my conscience for $4.50.
Yeah.
I'll
yeah.
sell you this." Yeah. It's a Bart sales extravaganza. Everything about me has to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's that is just like the key, the pinnacle of the human predicament. Everything about me must go, at least in this culture. We're willing to do it.
But that also sets up a resurrection theology too, because everything he had to lose himself to gain his soul.
Yes. Through, as Lisa says at the end, through fasting and through suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Some people believe that's the gain of soul. So what then, if that's the problem, then what's the formula for salvation?
Praying.
Grace.
Well, and to come to believe that a soul is important and that you do have a soul.
However you understand soul.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering. Mm-hmm. There were some other scenes that I edited out, but Bart actually goes to a couple other difficulties throughout that night. He's sleeping throughout the night and finds himself at the door of the pawn shop owner. And that's after a night of some kind of running around town looking for a soul, trying to buy a soul of this little kid. Any soul will do. I'm just buy your soul. Doesn't matter whose.
There was an interesting point in the end there that
his salvation, his getting back his soul, wasn't something that he did. It was his family that did it, his sister that did it for him.
Yeah, family. Again, we keep getting back to that. Family is so key in this show. Mm-hmm.
And that family person...
her sacrifice.
Yeah.
Her
and she doesn't have a funny idea about him. I mean, she doesn't knowing who he is. I didn't know you had 450. That's because it's in the piggy bank you don't know about. There's no. It's not just all glowy and wonderful. She knows she's saving her brother who steals from her.
Yeah, and he'll do it again. She knows he'll do it again. And, you know, in that way, so many times... Lisa turns out to be the Christ figure in this series.
Yeah.
She knows that Bart is
hopeless.
He's hopeless. He's just a perpetual mischievous character. And it's not like we don't see mischievous characters in other theologies and other religions. I mean, Coyote, for example, mm-hmm. is a mischievous character in a lot of Indian Native American traditions. We also see Anansi in African religions. Is the spider figure, who is this mischievous character. But we kind of need that character, not a satanic figure, not necessarily this evil general leading an army against God, but just this mischievous character. And so Bart kind of fills that role in this.
It also reminds me a little bit of Screwtape Letters.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the, actually in a sense, a satire of, but ours, that was where, wasn't it the devil and God stand there? Wormwood or something like
yeah.
that.
Wormwood,
yeah.
Yeah. So, do you know when and where, when does transcendence happen? When do the characters get outside of themselves?
In sleep.
Well, okay.
Prayer.
Prayer.
Desperation.
Yes,
you know,
suffering.
Or being able to feel, and I mean, it's almost, it reflects, I wonder how a number of people that were depressed would look at this, you know, and say, yeah, I know, being depressed is like having no soul, because there isn't a touch with my emotions. See that as being
definitely
a touchstone there. I was sick on Tuesday night and Wednesday, and this is the first day that I have felt really like a different person. And I mean, the transition about my own mental state and everything else is so profound that I just, this
mm-hmm.
really hits me, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I feel like my soul is back today.
Yeah, really. Well, you know, I think we're going to wrap up. We're about a quarter to noon right now. But the question was asked a couple days ago, do the producers really intend all of this stuff that we're just really taking the show apart and looking at the nuance? Do they really intend all this stuff? And to that, I would say two things. One, television is an art form. And as art, it can be interpreted according to the viewer. Beauty is in the mind of the beholder. Art is subjective. And then the second thing is that my intention is not necessarily to bring out what the producers and the creators of this show intend to have us understand, but what we can, in conversation, what we're able to bring out of it. So that when you go home, you might be able to watch television and analyze shows and look at shows and watch movies and that kind of thing, and read it with a little bit of cultural and theological understanding. You obviously have that. But to be able to bring some of that stuff out that the producers may not have been able to do or even intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tomorrow, last day, we're going to be talking about parable, the most difficult to find in TV programming today. I hope that I found one that's adequate. Thanks for coming.